7-3. This is the Department of Revenue. And Dallas, I'm going to open the hearing. Would you like to say anything for the record or to give the committee any guidance?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The bill was passed out of subcommittee with a due pass as amended with an unspecified $3 million reduction, general fund reduction. The understanding was at the time the agency could return, always had the option of returning to the emergency board should the need arise because of the impact of that $3 million reduction. There has been discussions going on since that time, and now you were given a go-ahead to bring it back to subcommittee and for possible reconsideration. Once you, if you vote to reconsider the vote, then we're back in work session for discussion and then a rework of the bill.
Then I think what we will do is to request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5573 was reported out with the recommendation to the full. Is that the right way to?
That is correct.
Okay. So are there any objections to doing that? So ordered. What I would like to do right now is, before we accept the motion to reconsider the vote, is to ask Ms. Hrushenko to come up, or should we reconsider the vote first?
I believe we need to reconsider the
okay.
vote so we can go into work session.
Then the chair would entertain a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5573 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee.
So moved.
Senator Morissette moves reconsideration. Any objection? So ordered. All right. Now, Ms. Hrushenko. I've been trying to get you up here. We're working like crazy.
Yep. All right, I've got Susan with me. So
yes, please.
So now the bill is back before the subcommittee.
Yeah, okay. For the record, the bill is back before the subcommittee, and I think I just want to make it clear on the record why it is we are here. This committee listened very thoughtfully to your presentation, and I think that when it became obvious that there was going to be a $3 million unspecified cut, that there was concern among the membership of this committee how you would manage to that cut, and you have written us a very thoughtful letter with respect to the management to the cut. I'm going to ask you to comment on that so that it's clear on the record. And then really the purpose of the reconsideration today is in my opinion, and I would bear correction by my colleagues, is to make it absolutely explicit on the record that you have the opportunity to come back to the e-board if you are not able to manage the cut to the degree that you emphasized in your letter that you might not be able to. So I would invite any comments that you'd like to make right now.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Hrushenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. You all have copies of my letter dated May 24th. In that letter, we tried to respond to the questions that came up during our last conversation about the effect of a $3 million general fund reduction in the department's 2005 to 2007 budget. We believe that we could manage about a million of that. We had a conversation, of course, with the House Budget Committee about the reduction in 3% reduction in services and supplies and capital outlay, and we have been looking for and have identified some places where we think we can have some savings there. But as I stated before when we spoke, with 85% of our budget being personal services, the rest of a $3 million reduction is something we'd have to manage through vacancy. We would do that as best we could to minimize the impact on revenue. And we would certainly keep the legislature posted, but we understand the financial constraints that the legislature is under in trying to balance a budget, and we'll do absolutely everything we can to support that budget.
I certainly appreciate the attitude by which you have approached this discussion, and I know that members on this panel have been very concerned about any actions by the legislature that would affect your ability to collect revenue. I would invite any comments from colleagues. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would echo appreciation for your cooperation. Notwithstanding that, it doesn't make it a good business decision, however, to make these reductions. And I'm just very concerned. I think we are nearly totally dependent upon income tax collections, corporate income tax collections, and to diminish the ability to be effective in that arena, I think, is rather short-sighted in making these reductions. If they can be made, your letter did not give me sufficient comfort to know that it could be managed without having some damage, and notwithstanding the ability to come back to the emergency board once you set in motion these reductions, I think it will have a negative impact. And for that reason, Madam Chair, I will be a no vote on the reconsideration. Thank you.
I can't help but look past the director over to our friends from the counties, and I think I want to, just so there's no misunderstanding later, and the absolute need for a high degree of communication as we move through your managing to those cuts, that one of the more controversial elements that you touched on in your letter was the possibility of needing to look into that state share, the county share, I'm sorry. And so, again, I am urging clear lines of communication, and we just want to be absolutely clear by building the record that we're building today that you have the opportunity to come back to the E-Board and explain to the members of the E-Board why you were unable to manage this cut. We do not want to damage our ability to collect revenue, just as Senator Morse pointed out. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering if we are going to hear from the counties before we make a decision on.
I would be happy to allow this.
Well,
we have the Secretary of State's budget, so be some brief comments.
Well,
but I'd be happy to.
But
allow
if we're
that.
Taking money from the counties that are needed, I voted no the last time. I am prepared. I guess was prepared, tentatively prepared to vote yes this time. At what point will you know that you are losing ground on tax collection? I mean, at what point will the damage be done, and at what point will you be able to repair it without having had permanent loss? I mean, that kind of bothers me. How can you take $3 million out of your department without impacting tax collection?
Chair, Senator Morissette, as I said in my letter, we can't guarantee that we can reduce, we could absorb a $3 million reduction without affecting revenue collections to some degree. What we're going to do is plan and manage the resources that you are able to give us as effectively and efficiently as we possibly can so that we minimize whatever loss there would be. But as I said in the letter, we will have to manage some of this through vacancy. And we're going to have to make really wise infrastructure investments so that we maximize the productivity of the staff, you know, that we do have. And we're in our planning process now. One of the things that we were waiting for was to get some indication which of the three budget levels that have been discussed over the course of the last few months was most likely to be the outcome. If we have the resources that are in this bill, then our plans will go with that amount of funding, and we'll manage it accordingly. But I can't say we will have a revenue loss. I can't say we won't have a revenue loss. All I can say is we will manage it just as carefully as we can, recognizing the need the legislature will have going forward into the next biennium for additional revenue as well.
How do you see the impact on counties if you use some of the county funds?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the total amount of funds that flow through to the counties to support the assessment and taxation function includes dollars that come from the county assessment function funding fee that's charged on the recording of documents. That those dollars will continue to flow. We've alerted you in the letter that we're a little unsure whether they're going to sustain at the level that we've seen over the last couple of years. The $5 million general fund that's included in our budget that augments that, is still in the budget. So The total amount that comes in from the recordings is in the range of $45 to $50 million. Then there's the additional five. If we it looks like we have to take $100,000 out of it. I don't think that it's going to cripple assessment and taxation. I think you'll probably hear from our county partners that they're struggling with revenue and budget cuts, you know, at their own level. But you know, we will continue to work with the counties on what's the most effective way to use the resources that have been given to us and to them to manage the whole system, and see if we can't find some ways to shift responsibilities around so we're doing it just as efficiently as possible. You know, we take this as a challenge, and we'll just do everything that we can to manage it very, very well.
May I ask one?
Please, Senator Morissette.
Thank you. What about a tax amnesty program to as a revenue enhancement tactic?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, Senate Bill 480 mm-hmm. Is in the House. It does have a positive revenue impact attached to it. It's compatible with one of the policy option packages that I believe is still in each version of our budget bill. And so our plan is to place a very, very high priority on that amnesty should Senate Bill 480 pass the legislature and become law.
Okay. Now, Senator Morissette.
What would you anticipate, thank you, Madam Chair, collecting through a tax amnesty from the bill that's in the House? I mean, the way it's worded, is that...
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the Legislative Revenue Office has priced that bill 16, 14?
I think it's 12.
$12 million?
I think. For the record, this is Susan Browning, Deputy Director of the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the package has in it abusive tax avoidance piece, what we call a voluntary compliance initiative for corporate, and then the amnesty piece. Last I heard, the sum total of it, the revenue from both of those pieces was $21.4 million. I think the amnesty is about half of that, but I'm not sure.
Excuse me. We're talking biennium.
Yes.
Yeah.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the anticipated reservation for emergency fund balance?
I'm sorry.
What is the anticipated reservation for emergency fund?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we haven't. The only thing that's available at this moment is what's in the governor's recommended budget that we've heard now, had no guidance, to my knowledge.
Well, as a follow-up, Madam Chair, that gives me additional angst over making a reduction of $3 million and then suggesting coming back to the emergency fund without knowing what that fund is. Reportedly, I've heard that it's less than, I think, the $40 million that we had in the 03-05 budget, and the resolution of all these competing interests in this budget, my great fear is it will reduce the emergency fund balance and will reduce the ending fund balance to the point that we could almost assure ourselves of a special session, plus not having funds available to backfill emergencies, true emergencies, and this being apparently will be one that we'll be anticipating. So I have additional reservations about approving this bill.
Well, before you come up with more and frighten what yeses there are in the room out of the room, we are in work session now, and so I would entertain a motion.
May I?
Okay. Senator Morissette.
Okay. What happens if we do not approve this as presented to us today? If I join Senator Morris in voting no, what happens?
I will probably have a stroll into LFO and ask the co-chair to join us.
Even then, Madam Chair, you couldn't move it out because it would be a tie.
Okay. Okay. May I address
Senator Morissette?
Okay. What, Senator Morris, is your motivation in voting no? other than the fact that it's a bad bill? I mean, what do you hope to accomplish?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, that should be reason enough.
Okay. I voted no the first time, but what do you hope to accomplish in the long run by voting no?
Well,
what's your strategy?
Well, I believe that obviously these discussions are all going to coalesce at some point in time in some omnibus rebalance of these disputing bills that we have. I think I feel incumbent upon me in my role is to raise the issues that I think from a business perspective, and that's what we're about here. And I do have concerns about, you know, the business decision to take funds away from the people that collect our revenue, and I have concerns about the path we are on to have virtually a de minimis emergency fund balance and an ending fund balance to allow for contingencies that may occur. We were fortunate in this last this biennium we're in now in that we had almost certainly a climbing trajectory in our economy. For that to continue for the next 2 years, which would mean a four-year climbing trend, I think is very optimistic. And for that reason, I raise these issues because I think there are things that we need to seriously consider before we spend all the money that we have.
One of the things that I learned as mayor of Springfield is that you don't make a decision until you've heard the final argument, and your final argument is compelling. I was tended to support the emergency fund option, thinking that there would be even additional money in the emergency fund from the ending balance, and that would take care of it. But I guess I question that. I also am concerned about taking any money from the county, even $100 million, I mean, $100,000. So I guess I would join you in my opposition at this point, hoping that we will continue to find a viable solution. Maybe the ending fund balance, the fact that it has to be adequate to take care of doing some real damage to our collection options. I mean, that's the worst case scenario, is that we're shooting ourselves in the foot by not adequately funding the department that brings in the taxes. And if we assume it's going to be okay and find out it isn't, then I guess we would have to consider ourselves as part of the problem in approving that. So I guess I would support you in your opposition at this point.
Okay. Well, one of the skills that I've picked up in three sessions is how to count to three. And and so the motion would be to accept the original LFO recommendation. In the absence of a motion, then, Dallas, we will simply
close the work session,
and Ms. Harshenko, I think we'll have the opportunity to visit with you again. With that, I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5573. Thank you for coming over.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before you leave, Dallas, we're back to the original motion, which I voted for and Bill voted against. Is that correct?
That is correct. That was the original one.
Okay. Strange game we played.
Well, we're not in any.
The work session is closed. You're still in committee.
Yeah.
Well, my motivation is that we force the issue. And maybe we will have an opportunity, hopefully, to once again consider this is not the final. I don't see this as our final action.
Well, it isn't because we don't have a budget for the Department of Revenue right
okay.
now.
Okay.
Well,
so
okay, then may I clarification?
Senator Morrison.
The motion we passed previously moved it out with a $3 million unspecified reduction.
Right.
Okay. Does that motion still stand?
No. You brought it back in reconsideration, and that motion was taken off the table.
Okay. So it's still an open issue.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
As it is now, this bill cannot go to full committee.
Right.
Apologize for being an asshole.
That's fine.
Is that on the record?
All right. The second piece of business that we are going to do today is to convene a work session. We are going to convene a work session on Senate Bill 5602. The Secretary of State's office invites the Secretary and his staff to come forward. We welcome Monica Brown from LFO, and we are continuing on with Anne-Marie and staff.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, as you mentioned, work session on the Senate plan for the Secretary of State, Senate Bill 5602. I believe you received a copy of the recommendations a few days last week, so you had a chance to review those. Also before you, I will note that you also have a set of dash 2 amendments that are at your place, but I believe when we get to the appropriate point, Madam Chair, rely on you to interject where that potential change will occur. By way of introduction, you probably will remember from the previous public hearings before either the Joint Committee or this one, that when the governor's budget was presented, where this is a separately elected constitutional office, the governor, besides making some technical adjustments, the governor's budget does not make comment or specific recommendations on any of the packages proposed by the secretary. As such, many of those packages, the second half of the funding, if you will, was not allocated in the governor's budget as well. So you're going to see throughout this recommendation many of those packages not going forward simply because funding was not identified in the governor's budget and subsequently not identified in either the House or the Senate plan. So just give that to you as a way of opening remark. Some high-level things before we start going through the individual packages by division. The proposal was to establish a special purpose appropriation for the production and distribution of the voters' pamphlets for 2006 primary and general elections. Establish limitation and matching funds for the Help America Vote Act. Approve some technology packages and make some technical adjustments for PERS and AG rates. My plan had been to go through each division and discuss each package as we go through.
Then that sounds just fine.
So going through your packet, starting with the work session action report, starting on page 527, we're starting out
actually
with the executive office.
Monica, just so that the secretary and his staff know what it is that we're going to do, I would either invite, you've had the opportunity to review this, either to invite your comments now, do it after each division, or to do it at the conclusion of Ms. Brown's presentation. I don't have a particular preference. I also, before we move on this budget, have had a request to take some public testimony. This was a somewhat controversial request, given that these witnesses have been before the committee before. I am erring on the side of creating the legislature as a place where public ideas are shared and exchanged, and I'm going to allow the testimony. It is going to be very limited in its time, and the witnesses already know that. It is a courtesy extended by this committee to invite them up again. So that's sort of the general overlay of what business we have to accomplish, and I want to make sure that you and your staff have an opportunity to comment on the LFO recommendations. Do you want to wait until the end?
Madam Chair, we reviewed the LFO report, and I don't know what, I mean, I just really want to express to you and to the members of the subcommittee appreciation for the fact that the budget that's proposed by LFO basically will mean no further loss of public services. And we're obviously very pleased with the recognition of the need for $700,000 to get the federal money. That's in the budget. That's great. And we're very pleased also with the recognition of the need to do technical work, the technology, working on the technology in POPs 172 and 173. So that's all good news. The only thing I'm going to express disappointment about is the two POPs relating to fraud investigation. One is in the elections division and the other is in the audits division. And we've had plenty of time to talk about those with the subcommittee. I just want to express disappointment that we know there's fraud, both in terms of expenditure of public money and in terms of elections, and we're less able than we'd like to be able to really investigate those. So that's, generally speaking, this budget looks great.
Good. Well, with that, Senator Morsette.
Yeah. I that was something that I noticed very quickly is the fraud. The money wasn't there for that. Now, imagine that the state of Oregon has a gubernatorial election coming up in 2 years, and imagine that there is a difference of 100 or 150 votes in that election, and imagine that there are a number of suits filed, and there will be people claiming fraud, and there will be allegations, and I would imagine that you would be put in a very uncomfortable position by saying we just didn't have the staff to investigate. Of course, you can always blame us for that. I guess that would be the good news. But no, I'm looking at what's happening around the country in some very tight situations, and I think that fraud in elections, and you know, is very high on the list of things, and we may avoid that, but we may not.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris said, my only comment would be if we had an election for governor that was divided by 150 votes, we would have a real challenge dealing with it, regardless of whether we had fraud, a fraud investigator or not. That's not an example to me of what we would be solving, because it's going to be, if we have an election that's 150 votes apart, it's going to be a real
May
problem.
I then rephrase the question? What then? You tell me what will be your biggest problem by not having sufficient money to expand your fraud division? Tell us.
Well, in terms of elections, there are a series of allegations that are made that come into us as allegations that we don't have any staff investigator for those allegations. We can refer matters to the Attorney General, and then he will have his Attorney General assistants do the field work and be in a position to either sue or not sue. And as you understand, the Attorney General has a lot of things on his plate, and it results in a real delay in investigations being done. Example would be last election cycle. There was real allegations of people being, throwing away voter registration cards if they weren't of one party or another, things like that. Well, by the time we could get anybody out to investigate it, they'd all left the state. So those are the kind of issues that get addressed in the elections division. In the audits division, there are two things. One is we have a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline, and to have a fraud investigator in the audits division so that we could really do more full bore investigation of waste, fraud, and abuse, that'd be number one. Number two, the audits division does a whole whole run at looking at various things going on in state government. And we find, for example, a credit card at one agency that spent $3,000 at Best Buy. Now, we can assume that that's all spent properly, but it'd be nice to have a fraud investigator to be able to investigate whether, in fact, those kinds of things that show up from those overview kind of audits were improper or proper. So that's kind of what we're feeling.
Follow-up, yeah, Senator.
Yeah, that basically gets at what I was talking about, because if it doesn't make a difference in an election, it may not matter as much as if it does. Now,
you know, we're talking about elections at all levels, and we have to be able to be ramped up. So thank you for your...
Sorry for my lengthy answer.
That's fine. Okay, we're going to start going through the packages.
Okay. Again, committee, starting on page 5 of 27 with the executive office budget. They had requested only one package, and that's a reclassification of an executive support position to a public information rep. This individual has been working out of class for several years now, and the position was reviewed by their internal HR management staff, so we're recommending approval of that package. Second package, 801, is the standard PERS and AG rate adjustments that you will see throughout each of the divisions. And so that is the full recommendation for the executive office. Within the elections division, I guess one other comment that I didn't make in the kind of overarching intro was the Help America Vote Act. While it is funded in this particular budget, how it had been proposed and how we've been working through, money was allocated to two or three different divisions within the Secretary of State. His proposal is to remove it from each of those divisions and put it into one so that you can better track it, they can better track and present it. So while you're seeing 161 denied here, it reappears later. So taking 161 out of the elections division. Voters pamphlet, as I mentioned earlier, the funding for this is provided in this recommendation through a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board. It was the intention, I believe, of both chairs of the House and the Senate. It is not calling into question whether the voter pamphlet should be produced. It is just a matter of reimbursing for only actual costs of producing and publishing that and having them come back to the emergency board as they did this last session.
And I think one of the things that we'll see reflected in the dash two is it is in totality a $1 million amount to allow the production of the voters pamphlet. Just as a professional staff said, I don't think there's any question about that. But there seem to be some members who preferred that it be done on a reimbursement basis and to allocate the resources half and half.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't understand your last comment. Half and half?
$500,000 in the special purpose appropriation.
Okay.
So the initial recommendation in the full packet that you received, it was a $1 million to the special purpose appropriation, nothing directly in the elections division. The dash twos that you can consider later, $500,000 is directly put into the elections division from the start, come back for $500,000 special purpose appropriation.
Right.
So you can consider those towards the end. Continuing on, page 8, package 163, there was two packages in for the voters pamphlet. One was to reinstate it as general fund. Another one was to support Senate Bill 163, which was increasing fees for the voters pamphlet. It appears at this point that the fee proposal, given the level of the necessary fees, that package is not moving forward. So this is removing the other funds limitation that's not necessary. Package 164, as the Secretary was discussing, was their initiative fraud proposal. This was not moving forward largely because it was not funded in the governor's budget and then did not find its way into the House or the Senate plan either for funding. Package 801, again, the technical adjustments, PERS and AG, as well as doing correcting a mathematical error on the phase-out of voters pamphlet from 0305. Package 812, the agency had a couple of different other fund accounts for miscellaneous receipts, one in the elections division. LFO is going through and reviewing the use of all non-limited funds in agencies to ensure that they are consistent with a certain set of guidelines, one being outside the control of the agency, no predictability of revenues or expenditures. And looking at the miscellaneous receipts, that did not seem to apply to the miscellaneous receipt accounts, so we are proposing to shift that money out of the non-limited category and into limited. LFO further reviewed their beginning balances and is suggesting that $50,000 in services and supplies be shifted from general fund and be supported by the miscellaneous receipts and other funds. This is a package that at this point we're proposing is only a one-time shift. We will look at their cash balances at the beginning of 05-07 and see if this shift can be sustained.
This, just to be clear on the record about this, the LFO's desire to review all of the non-limited and shift into limited. This is not unique to the Secretary of State's office and budget. This has been happening across state agencies.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Business Services Division, page 10. They did not bring forward any packages at the governor's rec level. There are two packages here now, one for the technical adjustment on AG and PERS. The second one, you may recall, the joint committee was discussing with the Secretary of State the possibility of gaining some efficiencies in their back office operations. The Secretary of State offered up the reduction in general fund that is proposed in package 811 on services and supplies. There are no questions. Continuing on to the Information Systems Division. Again, package 161, the Help America Vote Act, being removed from this division. You'll see it come back in a later division. A reclassification package. Again, individuals have been working in these categories. Their human resource staff have reviewed this, so we're recommending that the one position be reclassed from an ISS-1 to an ISS-4. Portions of this package were also withdrawn by the Secretary of State. They're handling in a different fashion. Package 172, Information Technology. There are several packages, proposals that are largely in support of the Corporations Division. They are listed out here for you, including Central Business Registry, on down to UCC code filings and notary upgrades. They've estimated $1 million. This package goes hand in hand with Package 173, which is the staff needed to implement those additional projects. So LFO is recommending approval of Package 172. And modifying Package 173 to maintain the individuals as limited duration and modify the PERS rate. Again, the reason for the limited duration, there is one position in here that is doing some security review and management for them. Again, LFO just thought it would be more timely to review once again for 07-09 to ensure the structure of that division and what's really needed for resources.
Is this becoming a pattern, this limited duration and a lower PERS rate? Is that a money-saving scheme?
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, the lower PERS rate is based on actions taken by the General Government Committee in other areas when they reviewed those budget and as well as the actuarial estimates needed. So the governor's budget at the time it was prepared, the PERS adjustment really is a timing issue. The governor's budget was prepared based on the best information that they had. PERS board took action subsequent to that, and we now know that the rate will be lower. So PERS rates are being adjusted across the board in base and all position requests. So that is a standard adjustment that you're going to see. To the limited duration, as I mentioned, and as reviewing their request and what they were going to use the positions for, some of these positions were in support of the technology improvements that they're doing in Package 172. So it seems reasonable to ask them to come back for 07-09 and say, okay, of the packages that you have completed and the upgrades that are there, what do you now need as permanent staff to sustain maintenance rather than development staff?
Okay, ma'am, I don't know if, I don't know if that answered my question. Is the limited duration and a lower, that is a lower PERS rate than a full-time position? It is not?
Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, no, there is not a, technically there is not a difference. However, if the individual that is hired into a limited duration position is not already a member of the PERS system, they would be coming into what is typically the tier three, if you will, the revisions that passed last session. So, yes, technically they would receive a lower contribution on that particular individual.
But I think, if I might, what you're getting at is, was there a correlation between a lesser benefit package with a limited duration employee? And I don't think that there's any correlation there at all.
No,
there
is not.
Thank you.
Thank you for the assistance. Didn't understand the question. Moving on to package 801, again, the technical adjustments for PERS for the base positions that they have, as well as the lower attorney general rates that were approved by another subcommittee. Again, package 811, agency offered up some general fund savings as a way of looking for efficiencies. So that's what you'll see in package 811. Moving on to the Human Resources Division, page 15. This one also had a reclassification of one position. Individual has been working out of class for 2 or 3 years now, so recommending approval of that. And package 801, again, the technical adjustment for PERS and Attorney General. Audits Division. Starting with package 131, again, these packages, as I mentioned earlier, would rely on funding that was not the second side of it, if you will. The assessment to state agencies was not funded in the governor's recommended budget. So agencies do not have this money for most of these packages in their budget. The first one is package 131, the legislative requested audits, so not moving that forward because of the lack of second funding in governor's and House and Senate plan. Package 132, the K-12 audits, that was reliant on substantive legislation. Should that legislation move later in session, it can be addressed in that bill if money is going to be found for the K-12 audits. The one package that is moving forward here is the package 133, the audit reclassifications. Again, reviewing those, the agency has withdrawn a couple of them because they're going to deal with them through permanent finance packages, but one is moving forward. Again, the individual, I believe, is working out of class in this already, and seemed reasonable to move that forward. They have sufficient beginning balance to fund this package. Package 134, independent legal representation. The agency withdrew that. They're still working with the Attorney General to work out their issues on representation when they need it for opinion audits. Package 135, fraud investigation, was discussed earlier. Funding not moving forward, that would have been through an assessment to state agencies. Package 136, not recommended approval again, providing additional $500,000 to allow them to contract out audits as they need to. Package 801, again, the technical adjustments for PERS and Attorney General. Concludes audits division. What you'll see on page 20 is a carryover from last session. It was a placeholder for the Cultural Trust Division. That was transferred to the Department of Economic and Community Development. So this is just presented here for history that division was, in fact, phased out. The Archives Division on page 21. Package 121, the Secretary had proposed to shift the Archives Division away from general fund support and implement an assessment to state agencies. In reviewing that and working with the agency over the last year or so, believe that there are still several technical issues that would have to be resolved before this type of assessment could work and we could actually see any general fund savings by charging federal funds a higher rate. So that work can continue.
Senator Morrison.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The cultural trust and losing two positions, what does that do to you?
Madam Chair and Senator Morse, that entire program was transferred to...
Transferred.
Yeah. It was not abolished. It was transferred. It's no longer part...
preoccupied when you mentioned that.
At its inception, the Cultural Trust was housed in the Secretary's office, and I think I can safely say, without fear of contradiction, had it not been for the Secretary's advocacy, this very important program would not have come into being. Decisions were subsequently made to house it with the Arts Commission, and that's when it transferred over to Oregon Economic and Community Development with no diminution to the trust at all. So this is historic.
So continuing on with the archives, so recommending denial of package 121, and it shifts, maintains their support as a general fund base for Archives Division. Package 122 had several components, including adding an archivist, doing some reclassifications, and shifting individuals again to the assessment. The piece of the package that LFO was recommending is that the reclassification of three positions do, in fact, move forward. These individuals are doing that work. And rather than shifting the additional money for reclasses back to the general fund, in review of their beginning balances, it appears they have sufficient cash to fund those reclasses with other funds, so having them do that with the other funds that are available. Package 801, again, technical adjustments, PERS, Attorney General. And package 812, like with the Elections Division, this was a review of their non-limited miscellaneous receipts. decided that they did not meet the criteria of having non-limited, so we're shuffling or reducing the non-limited and shifting it to other funds. Also looking at their beginning balances through this biennium, again proposing a backfill of general fund, shifting $75,000 from the general fund to other funds to be supported through miscellaneous receipts. Again, we will review in 07-09 to see whether they have continued cash in that account to support that shift. Corporations Division, they have two packages here. One they requested, again, on reclasses. Unlike the other reclass positions requested in this budget, LFO is actually recommending denial of that. It's not because of the work being done, but the agency is proposing to fund those positions through permanent financing packages. So the reclasses will happen. They're just going to do it administratively rather than add additional limitation. Package 801 is the technical adjustments for PERS and Attorney General. Moving on to page 25, here's where you're going to see Package 161, the Help America Vote Act, reappear again in a new program unit, consolidated agency-wide, so we can track all of the Help America Vote money, matching funds, and other funds as well. How this works in setting up the elections fund, the matching funds, which is 5% on most of the federal dollars received, the legislature appropriates the general fund. That money is then transferred to the elections fund and becomes other funds. So this is establishing not only the $700,000 as the initial match, but then the $700,000 that they will spend it as other funds, and it recognizes the federal funds in there as well. So that's why you see $700,000 in general fund and $700,000 in other funds. It's double counting the same pool of money for that part. In working with the agency, there's been a change in a few of the positions that have been requested. Bottom line, establishing 7 limited duration, 7 FTE for the next biennium. You're going to see 3 in elections, 2 in information systems, and no, I have that wrong. I'm sorry. 4 in elections, 2 in information systems, and 1 in business services to monitor their contract, continue the implementation of the centralized voter registration, as well as the overall HAVA implementation in elections. 5 positions are present in this biennium. This is an addition of 2. And with that, Madam Chair, I think that concludes the summary of the recommendations on the budget.
Mr. Secretary, any comments?
No, I think I spoke very clearly before. And
I just want to make sure that I afford you the courtesy.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Upadhyay, any?
Madam Chair, we don't make recommendations.
Well, I was just inviting any comments you might have. This is an inclusive committee today. We're talking to everybody. All right, with that, before we take final action on this, I am going to allow very brief testimony from Ms. Bendel, recognizing that this panel has heard this testimony previously and that this is actually a budget bill. This is not a policy committee, and we are not discussing policy issues here. Would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Ruth Bendel, 10980 Southwest Muirwood Drive, Portland, Oregon, 97225. Sharon Cornish.
My name is Sharon Cornish, P.O. Box 312, Hillsboro.
Fran Cinema, 10265 Southwest Citation Drive in Beaverton. That Ruth will speak for all three of us.
I'd like to frame what I'm saying more in terms of questions, particularly as there has been an expression of concern about fraud in elections. We've seen what's happened in several states, Wisconsin, Washington State, Arizona, particularly since they brought in proof of citizenship, the number of rejections. We're deeply concerned about one thing, and that is the way that we understand the system, the central voter registration system, is going to be implemented, and this relates directly to budget. The federal government is giving match money of $18 million, which is a lot for a system, And we are concerned because we heard that the Secretary of State only planned to use $4 million and put aside the other $14 million into some kind of a legacy trust. And we're concerned that that $18 million should be utilized to guarantee Oregonians a clean voter registration system. We do not know, particularly based on the statements that have been made by the Secretary of State to the effect that there is no data to prove that there's fraud, that fraud has occurred, and there's also no data to prove that the system is clean, except that we have already run into the fact that just in four counties, Deschutes, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington, 20,000 people who registered by mail and did not submit proof of ID, which HAVA requires when you register by mail, did not provide proof of ID, not only had there were sent ballots, had those ballots counted on election day, and then according to what was in the vote-by-mail manual, page 31 on the vote-by-mail manual, the record indicating that these people had not supplied proof of ID has been deleted. And I have a letter even from Salem, from Marion County, when we asked what the numbers were in that county, they could not give us those numbers because they had followed that instruction on page 31 of the vote by mail manual. I have a copy of it right here. We want to know why that instruction was given. Because for investigating those people are now lost in the system. We knew after the letter we got from Marion County that we were not going to be able to get any kind of information from remaining counties. But when you understand that when people fill out a voter registration card currently, they're giving name, address, possibly a phone number. They're giving their signature. They're ticking off, yes, I'm a citizen. Yes, I'm 18 years of age. Yes, that I've resided in Oregon for 6 months or whatever it is. And they're giving a date of birth. Well, I know about people not giving a correct date of birth. In fact, some information gathering has taken place. But based on what we have already done, going to some homes and everything, finding that people have never lived in that home, yet they've given that address. Based on that, based on what's happened in Wisconsin, what's happened where there are 1,500 voters just in Milwaukee County alone were found to be illegal voters. They'd given incorrect names and incorrect addresses. We're finding the same thing. Based on that, don't Oregonians deserve to have all the money that the federal government is willing to put in for the centralized voter registration system to go towards a re-registration program that wouldn't require everything all at once, but at least people since 1998, you can make it later, just be required to re-register. How much is that asking of people? We know that system requires the data pertaining to the last four digits of the social security number, requires a copy of the driver's license. What is going to be done by simply merging 2 million people who are currently on the rolls? Those people who've registered over the counter, turned in their own registration, have not even been required to prove identity. Then there's all the tens of thousands, I'm not talking about just these 20,000, all the tens of thousands that met canvassers, filled something out, wrote down Jack Robinson or whatever it is, and gave an address. I'm used to people giving false names and addresses when they fill out a petition sheet, so that this has happened, and that none of this is going to be addressed in a system when we are in a post 9/11 era. We have adversaries that are aware of the vulnerability of our system, which is trust but not verify. And that's the problem, not verify. We experienced something what happened with trust but not verify in the 1980s when the Rajneesh moved in, brought imported people from all over and took over the city of Antelope. We now have anonymity in voter registration and voting. And I'm just saying, asking you people, please, when you issue the funds, decide the match money for that you're going to give the match money for this $18 million, introduce some conditions of re-registration. When every illegitimate vote that comes in devalues the vote of legitimate voters, and we don't need to see a fiasco like happened in Washington State. It could happen to Democrats or Republicans. This is a nonpartisan issue. Certainly, as far as I don't even know whether Rajneesh were Republican or Democrat. We didn't need them. We didn't need them to take over the city. We don't need another effort. When our adversaries know that the system is vulnerable to fraud, trust them. They're not going to go away. They're going to utilize that vulnerability. And the fact that they know that the Secretary of State doesn't have any data, the fact that a matricular consular card is acceptable as ID by the Secretary of State's recommendation, from Mexico and Guatemala. For me, that raises the flag. If somebody's got that, that's the only ID that person can present, is something from overseas, from across the border, they should not be eligible to vote. Yet that is acceptable as a document of identification. I'd like to see a demand that the sort of ID that is being required relates directly to eligibility to vote, and that all the funding that is there that the federal government is giving us for implementing this system be applied to making sure that this system is a clean system and not just rely on date of birth, which may or may not be true, and the fact that a person is given a name and an address. That could mean cats, dogs, pelicans, and carrots, as far as I'm concerned. And we've got the lists. We've got the lists, and believe you me, we're following up on this. We don't want embarrassment. We want to know that every vote, legitimate, eligible vote, counts. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Bendel. Before we take any questions, I am simply going to tell you that what you have requested is a policy issue. We are a budget committee. There are some bills that are making their way through the system that you may be able to append your ideas onto, but this is not the proper venue to be dealing with the policy questions that you raise. And so I appreciate your testimony, Senator Morissette.
Well, I'm disappointed that we can't address this here. Who are we? I mean, tell me who you represent again.
Well, we formed a project called Truth in Voting, but we are being supported by the Taxpayers Association and the Homeowners Association. They are helping us with raising the funds for what we are doing, and we will persist in what we're doing. There's volunteers from both sides of the aisle that are assisting us.
I agree. Thank you. I guess I totally, totally agree with you that fraud and potential fraud diminishes the right to vote. I mean, it really diminishes it. Now, that raises a question, too, of when they purge the polls, which is not often enough as far as I'm concerned, but you raised some really interesting questions, and I'm hoping truly that we can address them. And I guess my question is it indeed, are we putting a big chunk of money into something else? I mean, are we putting some away to use at a later date or for a different program?
Yes, and what I'm going to do now that we've heard from the witnesses is to invite Mr. McGuire up, who may be able to speak to this. Senator Morse, do you have a question before this panel goes?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And may I give you copies of the testimony?
Please.
Madam Chair, I never cease to be in really awe of our system of government that allows this kind of testimony to come forward and challenge the system, and I think that's wonderful.
Well, a number of interesting questions have been raised about the whole Help America Vote process, and I want to come back to Oregon in just a second. I brought for the committee an article that I happened to fall across over the weekend that is talking about electronic voting machines, and I will share it with the committee before we depart. But the question before us, Mr. McGuire, is of the money that we're leveraging with the $700,000 state investment, $17 million in federal money, would you mind detailing for the committee and the room how that's going to be spent?
Madam Chair, for the record, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State. Our current budget request does not anticipate spending any portion. We are not getting authority to spend any portion of the next nearly $18 million of federal funds coming in. We are... The limitation contained in the budget before you is spending down the money appropriated in federal fiscal year 03. The $18 million is federal fiscal year 04 money. We're still spending federal fiscal year 03 money. Unlike most federal funds, this is no year federal money, so it doesn't expire. We are anticipating spending approximately $11 million on developing and maintaining for 5 years the centralized voter registration system. That's full support, help desk. That's the operation of the system for 5 years. The funding for HAVA generally, decisions about funding for HAVA generally have gone through a steering committee established, required by the Help America Vote Act. The steering committee has county clerks, has people from the Secretary of State's office, has people from organizations that are interested in election, like the League of Women Voters, and several members of the Legislative Assembly. At this point, the plan is that through the next 5 years, that we anticipate at the end of 5 years, our goal is to have $15 million set aside. So the bulk of this next $18 million coming in, have $15 million set aside as what we have called an endowment. There will be all sorts of new expenses at the end of 5 years. I mean, we've budgeted for the costs of the CVR system, the centralized voter registration system, for 5 years. There will be all sorts of new costs at the end of 5 years. And what we wanted to do was leave money behind. The election fund is an interest-bearing account, and the money, the interest earned, stays in the account. We wanted to leave behind a fund so that my successor 5 years from now doesn't have to come before a future committee and say that these obligations were taken on and we didn't plan, and all that federal money is gone, and so we now need $3, $5, $8 million of general fund money to continue to maintain these programs. We wanted to leave behind an endowment to at least pay for a portion of those costs.
Are there any federal constraints on how long you can hang on to that money?
Madam Chair, no. And of course, to make any expenses, to spend any of that money, we would have to either come back to the assembly during a session or come to the emergency board for approval to do so.
Senator Morse, then Senator Morse.
Thank you. You heard the testimony, and I would hope that as part of establishing this program, that built into it is a system of checks and balances in terms of how well the program works. What are the loose ends? Are we opening ourselves up for abuse and so on? I mean, the normal course of establishing a program should do that. So are you addressing the concerns raised by this group?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, some but not all. It is not our plan, nor do I think we have authority to require every Oregonian or some subset of Oregonians the authority to require them to re-register to vote. And frankly, if there was legislation to require every Oregonian or some subset of Oregonians to re-register to vote, we would vigorously oppose it. I think that is absolutely a solution in search of a problem. We believe very strongly that with the vote-by-mail system, the fact that ballots for every election are sent to voters, and if that voter is not there, those ballots are returned to the elections office, provides the best system in America for detecting fraud and voters that don't exist. We feel very strongly that the system we have detects any fraud that exists. And frankly, if Ms. Bendel or anybody has evidence that people are voting improperly who are not entitled to do so, I'd sure like to have it in the form of a complaint, and we will investigate it vigorously. I mean, it is a Class C felony to swear that you're a citizen of the United States and sign a voter registration card. I mean, there is an oath on the bottom of the voter registration card where one swears that under penalty of felony conviction that one is a citizen of the United States. And if they have evidence that people have signed that improperly, I'd sure like to see it, and we'll go after them. We have prosecuted people in the past.
One quick follow-up.
Senator Morsett, then Senator Morsett.
When do you purge? Is it up to the county clerks to purge, or is it up to the state to purge? I mean, there are dead people out there getting voter cards. When do we purge? At what point?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, at every election, when ballots are returned, those voters are changed to be, their status is changed to inactive, which means at the next election, a ballot is not mailed to them. A postcard is then mailed to each of those voters, which is forwardable. The ballot is not forwardable. So if the voter has moved, a postcard would be sent, which would be forwarded to the voter, saying, you're now inactive. If you want to vote, you need to let us know. So that happens at every election.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is just a little different shade of Senator Morissette's. To what extent is our voter registration system an honor system?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, let me answer that two ways. I mean, to an extent, it is. I mean, one swears an oath that one is telling the truth when one registers to vote, and the penalty for lying is it's a felony. It is an honor system to the extent that if you are not honorable, we have the ability to come after you pretty hard. When the centralized voter registration system is in place December 31st of this year, the voter registration requirements in this state will change to participate in a federal election. Every registrant beginning January 1, 2006 will be required to submit their driver's license number. We'll have new registration forms. We will then match the information provided on the voter registration card with the DMV database. If a voter does not have, if a citizen does not have a driver's license number, a driver's license, they will be asked to provide the last four digits of their Social Security card. The DMV is required under HAVA to then match the last four digits with the Social Security Administration database. If a citizen certifies that they have neither a driver's license number nor a Social Security number. They can check a box and say, I don't have either, and they can still register to vote. However, we will match those names against the driver's license database, and if they're lying to us, that's potentially a Class C felony.
Follow-up, Senator
Morse. Thank you. Just kind of following this thread, what's the probability prospectively that fraud would be detected in registration?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we believe that, to the extent that the DMV database and the Social Security databases are good, and we don't have any experience in matching to them, this will be the first time in Oregon that voter registration data will be matched against any other file. Among the other requirements of HAVA is that we work with the Department of Corrections and the Health Department to get both records of people who are incarcerated under felony convictions and therefore ineligible to vote. Now, that's a little bit of a different situation in Oregon since we vote by mail, and our felony laws relate to people who are incarcerated, and so the prisons know not to let ballots come into the prison. So our felony law is at least the most straightforward of most felony laws in the country. And then we'll get death records from the health department and send that information out. Now, our plan, particularly with the death record, well, with both death records and with the Department of Corrections data, is to provide that information to the county clerks. Clerks in Oregon are the legal registrar of voters, and what we intend to do is to provide them with that information and have human beings make the determination that a person on a Department of Corrections list is in fact the same person as the registered to vote person or that someone died. We don't want a computer program making those decisions unilaterally. We want people to make those decisions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. McGuire. At this point, we need to address two more. We have to take action on the budget, and we need to discuss the performance measures. And, Monica, you want to go ahead and discuss the performance measures now?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I direct you to the final page in the packet that was distributed. You may recall from the discussion before the joint committee, a good number of the measures that the Secretary of State came forward with are in development, or these are relatively new, and they don't have a lot of historical data with them. The recommendations here are largely to are consistent with what is going on in other agencies. It's deleting the customer satisfaction measures that they have and opting for the two standard ones that are being applied across all state agencies through an effort with Department of Administrative Services. I don't believe the Joint Committee concluded on what were the final set of performance measures that this agency should do, but rather they needed to continue to work and develop those and work with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, along with several other agencies that will be going through that same effort, to continue to refine and make sure their measures reflect activities in management and best practices. So that is the recommendation here, is to largely keep the measures that they have for now and continue to refine those and work during the interim and report back.
Okay, let's do these backwards. Let's go ahead and act on the performance measures. The chair would entertain a motion reflecting the LFO recommendation. Senator Morris so moves. Any objections? No. Then they are those performance measures and the continuing improvement program is adopted. And now we will need to turn to the proposed amendments. And Monica, if you could walk us through the dash two proposed amendments.
The difference between the, Madam Chair and members, the difference between the dash ones and the dash twos is in the special purpose appropriation only. That is on page two, section four. The recommendation that was distributed to you last week was suggesting a $1 million special purpose appropriation for the production of the voter's pamphlet. That would essentially have $0 in the elections division in their legislatively approved, with the direction that once they know the final cost, they are to return to the e-board to be reimbursed. The dash twos split the difference, if you will. It gives them $500,000 to the elections division now, with the understanding that they would go forth and produce, and when costs exceeded the $500,000, they would return to the emergency board for any final costs up and above that for producing the primary and general election voters.
Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a cap on the special purpose appropriation out of the emergency fund, or is it open-ended?
Madam Chair and Senator Morse, the special purpose appropriation would in fact be capped either at the $500,000 or at the $1 million. However, the emergency board would have the authority to go into its general purpose, to provide additional resources if, in fact, the cost of those pamphlets exceeded that. And, in fact, in this last interim, you might remember that we did, in fact, do that and wound up exceeding by a few dollars. The approach here, a couple of different things going on. The primary and general obviously will not be a presidential in 2006. The agency was not sure exactly how much it was going to cost. Obviously, several factors go into that, number of initiative petitions, number of arguments that are filed, number of candidates are there. They have been going through efforts to make sure that they are producing the pamphlet in the most efficient manner possible and shrinking up the space where they can and getting the best deals that they can to do that. The proposal really, several members commented during the interim that they rather liked the idea of the reimbursement. Therefore, you didn't over-allocate up front and then have to wait till the end of the biennium to get back any sort of savings. It was allow them to use the cash flow that they have, and then we will give you the dollars when the pamphlet is produced and published. And again, I think last session there was some debate as to whether the pamphlet should go forward or not. That does not seem to be the case this time. Folks are in agreement it should go forward. It's just a matter of when do you reimburse and for how much.
Okay. Senator Morse recommends approval of the dash two amendments. And is there any objection? There being none, so ordered. So we now have an amended budget bill, and our final subcommittee action, and the chair would entertain a motion to this effect, would be to move Senate Bill 5602 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Senator Morris moves the LFO recommendation to move Senate Bill 5802 as amended to the full committee with a due pass objection. So ordered. We will need a carrier.
Oh.
Senator Morris said volunteers.
I volunteer.
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair, did you reference 5802 or 5602?
I may have said 5802, and for the record, we have moved Senate Bill 5602 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation, and I appreciate your correction. Monica, any other business to come before the committee? Members, any other comments? Senator Morissette.
I appreciate your being here today. I mean, you may not feel like you've accomplished a whole lot, but you have. You're raising awareness, and I, the good chair passed an article out that talks about hackers on systems and so on, and it's fraught with danger, and I think we really have to pay attention to it, and I appreciate your being here to help us do that.
Thank you very much. There being no other comments, I'm going to declare the Senate Special Committee on Budget Subcommittee on General Government adjourned. Now, before the committee departs...